Intervju Radija Študent.
V današnjem Ereš intervjuju gostimo Paula Banksa, frontmana newyorške indie rock zasedbe Interpol, ki bo ob podpori domačih Icarus Down v svoji solo izvedbi nastopil v kinu Šiška. Z njim se je pogovarjal Luka Vučković. Poslušamo.
Hello Paul, it's nice to have you back here in Slovenia. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. It's nice to be back.
You're touring across Europe these days. Is this your first tour as a solo artist? First bigger tour?
It is the first bigger tour, yeah. On my Julian Plenty record, I did like 2 weeks of shows in the U.S. and like a week of shows in Europe, I think. Very, very few. So this is the first kind of extensive tour of Europe, yeah.
And it is strange to do it alone, without the guys you spent half of your life with?
It's funny, a lot of people ask me that, but it's not at all strange. It's I think it kind of boils down, in Interpol's case and when I work alone, in the live format, for me, it's about the songs, and it's about the presentation of songs, and I think that's what the audience is responding to as well. So when I'm with Interpol, you know, I look over and I see Daniel, and I look back and I see Sam, and I have a lot of trust and a lot of kind of respect and a feeling of comfort that we're all playing the songs well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Daniel's feeling it and having a good show, and like, mm-hmm. then I respond to that energy on behalf of the song, not really on behalf of myself. And so when I work with these guys also play these songs really, really well. Mm-hmm. And so I will look to them when I'm playing and sort of see, like, cool, Damien's having a great show and, like, getting into it, and I know we sound good, so I feel very positive. And, you know, that's about it. I don't think I would be able to... If I had gone on tour with a band that was not prepared, then it would feel weird and feel different, because then I'd be suddenly sort of in a less professional situation, because Interpol's very professional, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we are very professional in this band, and these guys have all been playing music for 15 years, too. So it's not weird, no. Mm-hmm. It's just different. Mm-hmm.
And so since touring became a big part of your life, how do you see all the process these days? I mean, something you need to do it for yourself, I mean, as a solo artist, or, I don't know, just to have fun and deliver your music?
I don't want to sound too old and jaded when I answer that, but the reality is, for musicians especially, I'm what you could consider a debut artist, because just because I'm in a band that's more well-known, people don't automatically go to my solo shows or buy my solo records. I think it's the same with anybody like Tom York too. I don't think he gets all of Radiohead's fan base. I think he's got to generate his own fan base, and that's what I have to do. So tour is also the only source of income for an artist. So it's not even really it's not because it's fun so much. I mean, touring is fun. I don't think I could do it if I didn't enjoy it, but it's kind of a necessity, because, you know, if you take a loan from somebody to make a record, and, you know, then they get all their money back from the album sales, and then the artist is sort of left with, you know, nothing. So I'm not doing music. I would do music for free, but I wouldn't go to studios and make, you know, polished albums unless I was somehow making a living or something like a living. And so tour is the only way to, you know, have any hope of making an income in music, which... Certainly, it's an interesting thing, because it used to not be that way. It used to be that I think you could be a new artist or someone in my situation and just say, no, I'm not really going to tour. I'm just going to, you know, sell records, and that'll be a little bit of money, and it'll be okay. But that's not the case anymore. So on the one hand, it's a really interesting kind of position to be in, because I think artists my age and stuff, you have to figure out how to not be in a bad mood about the way that there's no more money in the industry. And I think what you need to do, and in my case, you know, I consciously got into music not to make any money. That wasn't the idea. I got into music because that was my passion. So it's kind of healthy as a 34-year-old to say, like, well, remember what your passion is. You know, you never did this to, you know, have wealth and fame. You did it because you love music. So I just sort of always kind of remind myself that it's, you know, I'm doing what I love for a living. It's just that it'd be nice if you could sort of end that sentence with the part about for a living, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. rather than just sort of, you know, I don't know, for a loss, you know.
I was always wondering why a lot why a lot of successful musicians from rock bands tend to record a solo album. So what was the urge for creating it? What were your needs? Is it the intimacy of recording it or the intimacy of presenting it?
I think my situation is different from a lot of those other occasions, though, because I think a lot of times people assume that being the singer in a band, it means that you're the one introducing the songs to the band. But I'm not. So I write songs, but Interpol songs begin with Daniel's songs. So I'm a collaborator with those guys, but I'm a songwriter in the sense that I write the vocals. But to me, as a songwriter who kind of began as a guitar player, that's not everything that songwriting is. Mm-hmm. To me, you know, that component that Daniel does in Interpol of bringing in a chord progression, that's a fundamental aspect of songwriting that I enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. So I had to create an outlet for myself to do that, mm-hmm. Which is why I do this. I don't think it's the same thing. If I was the guy in Interpol that said to everybody, you play this, you play that, you play this, mm-hmm. then I would have no need to do a solo project. Mm-hmm. It's simply because I do write songs and I would like people to hear my songs, mm-hmm. so I have a solo project. Mm-hmm. So I think that's different than in some cases, whereas like, my impression of Julian Casablancas of the Strokes mm-hmm. is that I always thought, I'm not sure if I'm even right, but I thought he wrote the songs in the Strokes. Mm-hmm. So in his case, why the solo project? But in reality, it's probably because they're very collaborative. Like in Radiohead's case, it does seem more clear that I never had the feeling that he wrote all of their mm-hmm. music. Mm-hmm. I had the feeling that, like Interpol, it was much more collaborative. And so then it makes sense that he would do a solo record simply because maybe he wants to write the chord progression and sing rather than just sing.
So your first solo album was Julian Plenty's Skyscraper. Now you're presenting yourself as Paul Banks. Why the sudden change?
Again, that kind of goes back to when I joined Interpol, I was a songwriter performing by myself as a solo artist, and I would perform as Julian Plenty. Mm-hmm. When I joined Interpol, I kind of stopped doing that. Mm-hmm. And there were songs that I'd written when I was in college that were in my mind only. And I sort of told myself when I committed to being, you know, Interpol, that I would come back and finish what I'd started as mm-hmm. a solo artist. Mm-hmm. Then it took me about 8 years before I ever really did that, but it was very important for me to finish it like I'd begun. And mm-hmm. so before anybody knew me as Paul Banks, I was Julian Plenty. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to document that period of my life where mm-hmm. That was my concept as an artist. I'll have a fake name and have an alter ego, and I wrote these kind of folk songs. Mm-hmm. So when I did my first record, the idea was to kind of like cheat time and like go back in time and mm-hmm. pretend like I'd never been in a band mm-hmm. and been known as Paul Banks and just do the Julian Plenty mm-hmm. thing like I'd originally intended to do it. So I did it. But like having an itch that you scratch, then I scratched the itch. So mm-hmm. now moving forward, it's kind of like, well, I have, mm-hmm. you know, I'm now me. It's much simpler with journalists if I just use my real name. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I've documented that early part of my career and now I want to move on. Mm-hmm. So even though this record it's not to me some big departure from the Julian Plenty mm-hmm. record, it's just an evolution from it. The only difference is that name change. And mm-hmm. the name change mm-hmm. is really just because I just wanted my first one to be my college years documented faithfully mm-hmm. and moving forward. You know?
And is this your more personal record now?
It's not more personal than Julian Plenty by any means. No, not at all. I think all of my music is equally personal. Mm-hmm. I think it's really just, this appears like it's going to be something more personal because suddenly it's my real name instead of a fake name, but it's not. It's really just that I liked the simplicity, and having an alter ego when everybody already knows you as Paul Banks is complicated. It makes interviews complicated, and it was fun for me to do that, and it was satisfying to fulfill my idea, but moving forward, I'd rather keep it simple.
But I'm curious. Was the sound of Julian Plenty back then similar to the sound of the record?
When I first did it in college, no. It was, I mean, songs like Girl on the Sporting News, Fly As You Might, On the Esplanade, Fun That We Have, yeah. They sounded like they do on the record when I wrote them because back then I did use 4-track recording mm-hmm. and so it was just me and a guitar with no drum beat. But yes, those songs, which are kind of the real songs that made me have to make that record, they didn't really change at all, which is part of the reason why I wanted to keep it a Julian Plenty record, because 10 years later, after writing On the Esplanade, it was still On the Esplanade and nobody had heard it, you know.
There are some bits of film quotes on Banks. even in its rock limitation, the music writing is really open and free-spirited. How did you decide what worked best for songs?
I don't know. It just kind of comes to me. I've always liked found sounds. I often love using kind of just, you know, the sound of a bus putting on the brakes, and it has that very high kind of whale sound noise, or machinery. And, you know, many sounds have tone. Mm-hmm. So I like, you know, instead of using, on one song on the record, there's a chemical warfare siren from mm-hmm. Switzerland mm-hmm. In Another Chance. There's like this, and that's actually me recording, you know, a chemical warfare nice. Siren that was going off. And it's a beautiful, it's not really in key with the song, but it's sort of fluttering against the key, and mm-hmm. so it kind of makes a nice tension. Mm-hmm. Things like that also apply to kind of words, and I feel like, you know, just pulling somebody's voice from a different medium of recording and putting it into a song, it's just immediately kind of interesting and, mm-hmm. and evocative to me. So I've always been into doing that. I just made a mixtape as well, where I used every film sample that I've ever wanted to use, almost, because it's I gave it away for free, mm-hmm. so I didn't have to clear those licenses. Mm-hmm. On my records, I would love to put quotes from all kinds of movies. It's just very difficult mm-hmm. to do so. So what I did use was a friend of mine's film. Mm-hmm. So I didn't. I just had to ask him, "Can I use your movie in my mm-hmm. song?" And he said, "Yeah." You know, he's a good buddy. Mm-hmm. And I used it also because I thought the performance of his actor was on par with a Hollywood performance. You know, he's a very, very good actor in that movie that my friend made. And then my friend wrote the dialogue, the stuff about something wrong with my brain. And I just thought it was, like, really cool, you know. And so, but it's about as simple as that. And I feel like part of the reason why I enjoy being an artist is because I don't really ever need to explain, even to myself, why I'm doing something. Mm-hmm. I think if you work in any other legitimate business, you have to be accountable for what you're doing. But I think kind of as a musician, you know, I'm accountable in the sense that if nobody likes it, then it's not going to work. But I don't even have to figure out for myself, why do I want to put film quotes in my songs? I just do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I like that.
Okay. What do you enjoy listening nowadays?
It's funny. I listen a lot because I've been working on so much music. I've spent a lot of time finishing the mixtape. Before that, I was spending a lot of time finishing my album. I listen a lot to music I'm working on because I'll demo it and then I'll walk around and get an idea of what's working and what's not working. Mm-hmm. And also because I'm very excited, especially before something is released. You know, once some things are released and people are criticizing it, then I sort of don't want to hear it as much because then I will hear problems. But before anybody's heard it, I enjoy listening to what I'm working on a lot. And other than that, I listen to hip hop. Mm-hmm. And the most recent thing I was listening to was Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
I really like that record a lot.
Mm-hmm. Nice. The year 2012 was somehow big for you. As a band member, you have an opportunity to evaluate your previous work with celebration of the 10th anniversary of edition of your first record, Turn on the Bright Lights. And on the other hand, you created a new life named Banks. You have a comment about that?
I think... Yeah, I guess it certainly was a big year. I think the re-release, I didn't evaluate sort of, you know, I'm really honored that there is a re-release and that anybody's interested in the re-release. I'm very proud of that record. And it was, you know, very satisfying that we were able to do that. And I think we made a really good re-release as well. And as far as my record, again, this record to me is not like the first record. It's the mm-hmm. second record. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I also kind of feel like, yeah, I guess I'm a little bit more professional in terms of kind of I want to work. And I do feel like while I think inspiration wouldn't fade, but I think the nature of my work will change as I get older and mellow. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of have a feeling of like right now I have a lot of ideas and mm-hmm. I should just do them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just that I'm quite motivated at the mm-hmm. moment.
Yeah, naturally. What is your relationship with New York these days?
My relationship with New York is, I don't know, it's still as passionate as ever. It's still a very stimulating place. It's still, you know, I have a few homes. I have a few places that I feel like are home for me, mm-hmm. and they're very different. Mm-hmm. So New York is a home for me, but also kind of a very remote destination that I like to go to where mm-hmm. there's nobody around and just the ocean is also my home. Mm-hmm. And I think I could easily spend 2 years just in that rural environment, mm-hmm. like with nature all around. I honestly could spend 2 years there, and I guarantee I could write 3 records in those 2 years. So I don't need like the city environment to be creative. I wrote so much of this record on a beach. Mm-hmm. And like the Frank Sinatra cover entirely on the beach. A few songs, everything about it I wrote on the beach. And I don't feel like I need the city and the chaos to be creative. So anyway, but New York City is still one of my homes. Mm-hmm. And it's an amazing place, man. It's mm-hmm. a cultural center of the world, you know, one of the cultural centers of the world. It's like not even part of the United States in that sense. You know, it's part of the United States sort of by law, but by culture, it's so international that that's why it's a great place for everybody, I think.
Okay, Paul, thank you for your time, and see you tonight at show. Thank you.
Tako, tole je bil pogovor s Paulom Banksom, ki ga lahko danes ob 21. uri ujamete v kinu Šiška, z njim pa se je pogovarjal Luka Vučković.
Intervju Radija Študent.